This is the July 29 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dave Chatterton. He's at Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Steve Freed joins us from ADM Investor Services out of the Chicago area. And Chip Nellinger is with us from Blue Reef Agri Marketing in Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like in its entirety on our website at WILLAG.org. Let's get a list of items we should discuss for the day. Steve Freed, I think I'll start with you for the afternoon. What's on your list today?
Well, I mean, it's weather that we're trying to figure out this late in the season if we can rally or not. It's rare that we do. And then we are still trying to figure out, you know, what the demand is going to be, especially in corn. And then finally, the money flow. The managed funds are bearish corn. They're willing to sell rallies until proven differently.
Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that. I think that covers a lot of it. I think demand is going to be a big question here. Dollar's starting to kind of break out again from a trend line to the downside. Is that going to be sustainable? Is that going to maybe put some money flow back into inflation trade? And you know, on top of that, like Steve mentioned, we're in the middle of a weather market, and it's going to be very interesting here in the month of August as to how much more rainfall we get and how hot temperatures stay.
And Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, thanks, Todd. I mean, you know, to echo what Chip and Steve have said, I think, you know, futures here have been a little bit range-bound here of late as we've got this battle going on weather and what yield is going to be and where we're going to land. It's been mostly a supply argument to this point. We've gotten a little bit quiet on the demand side, as Chip indicated. But I really do think the longer-term story for the markets, particularly as we start to look at and beyond harvest to the end of the year, maybe early next year, is really demand. And particularly, we've heard a lot this here of late about China and, you know, being absent from our export market and things that are going like that. But I do think that later in the year, we have a very optimistic or a very positive and supportive demand outlook that needs to not be lost sight of here as we talk about marketing and risk management, where things are going to go.
Steve Freed, when you were on our program in January, it was the end of that month. It was the first time that anybody really had begun to talk about big demand, and you certainly were at that point for the crop that was in the bend and going forward. Has that demand picture changed very much for you?
Well, I think, you know, a lot has changed. I think, first of all, we started trading the lower South American crops, the big China demand buying 35 million tons of beans from us and 23 million tons of corn. And all that kind of came together at the same time. And we thought, okay, we're just going to plant a lot of acres and we're going to satisfy this demand, and this demand is going to go on forever. So we were kind of surprised at the June acreage report to not have as many acres as the market had thought. And then dealing with the weather is frustrating so many people that they decided to stop trading, because you've got the bearish people in the east, it's talking about record yields, and you got the bullish people in the west that are talking about, in some cases, well below average yields. We believe the Chinese will take the 30 million tons of corn this year, but we might also gain some demand because of the lower Brazil crop. So it comes down to what is the crop, and that'll decide, you know, how high or how low prices are. And the beans, you know, I think going into the home stretch here, exports and crush will probably be less than what the USDA is saying. So there might be a little bit bigger carryout eventually for 2021. But, you know, if we have just 1.8 bushels less on the average yield this year, we wipe out the entire 21-22 U.S. carryout. So, we do think that China will come in and take the 100 million tons of beans. And I think given the South American situation, they'll buy 35 from us. But the market is disappointed that they haven't been a buyer yet.
Dave Chatterton, you talked about this being a supply-led market, at least for a little bit, looking for that demand to stay with us, listening to Steve talk about potential demand going forward. How do you view the marketplace?
So, yeah, Todd, I mean, you know, again, I think Steve's right on point talking about we've seen a little bit of disappointment here, as particularly as China has slowed down their purchases of U.S. Corn and soybeans here in the last, let's say, 4 to 6 weeks. We had a very big, you know, May, June, and time period for them in the market, as you said, to put in a lot of exuberance, if you will. We're not surprised by the slowdown here. You know, I think there is room for the USDA to lower their yield numbers probably at the end of the day and tighten the balance sheets a little bit from the supply side. But I think the demand side probably has just as much to give here. If you look at what's going on here, you know, the USDA is, if you want to talk about corn, is showing Brazilian corn exports next year at 35 million metric tons. I mean, I think that's almost laughable when you look at the production numbers, the way that they're importing corn, their domestic market, and the pricing there and what's going on. Our number would probably be closer to 20, and that's a big hole that has to be filled primarily probably by U.S. supply. Beans have been a steadier here. We've seen pretty poor crush margins in China. We've seen, you know, the port stocks come up here a little bit. Those are starting to improve slowly, but freight has a lot to do with that. And I think later in the year, that situation, you know, lends itself to the Chinese crusher being caught without a lot of product in front of them, potentially having to march through a door to buy some product here. So I guess at the end of the day, what that points to, in our opinion, is a tightening of this balance sheet in corn and soybeans both going forward. And I think that continues to be supportive for prices. Doesn't mean we're wildly bullish here, but I think we've got a situation that lends itself to some upside potential under the right circumstance.
Chip Nallinger, we have two that say that we could tighten the balance sheet mostly based off of a shorter corn crop. Do you have a Eastern Corn Belt bias instead?
You know, I think the Eastern Corn Belt has a potential to be really good in corn. Obviously, we're going to need another rain or two to finish this out. We've got a lot of grain fill left. I think that we got good potential, but I think it almost doesn't matter to some extent crop size because of, you know, the points that both Dave and Steve are talking about. We're tightening the balance sheet. On top of that, you got Russian wheat, a couple million tons lower than expected. It seems like every week you get a small downgrade in the Russian wheat crop. The Canadian drought is well publicized. You got some competitive feed grains, barley, oats. You know, kind of shrinking. We've got our own spring wheat problems. So feed grain and corn, we definitely are shrinking the carry out in the world. So even if we raise trend line, I think it raises the, you know, potential harvest low, and it gives us good opportunities out until, you know, winter, early spring, when South America has new crop supplies again. We're the only place to get corn and beans in the world, and the demand is very strong. So, you know, I don't want to get too bowled up. It's probably still going to be a frustrating trade. We're not going to go straight up, I don't think. But I think the bias is going to be, you know, for higher and shrinking stocks and good demand. And as soon as harvest or shortly after, I think that, you know, kind of starts being the main theme all the way into winter. And then obviously going to play the weather situation again for the South American crop. They still have really bizarre weather in Brazil, very dry still. They've had multiple freezes. I saw a picture this morning of snow from Brazil. So they're having some really bizarre rain, or I shouldn't say rain, weather situation down there that isn't going to fix itself overnight. And that still could carry over and, you know, be a factor for their, you know, our winter, their spring production there down in the Southern Hemisphere.
Steve Fried, what's your fundamental assessment of the soybean market?
There's just so many balls in the air. I mean, first of all, we have to figure out what the Chinese hog herd is. And then we have to try to figure out, you know, if they're going to meet the phase one trade deal. You know, some people think that our relations with them is probably the worst it's ever been. And does that mean that they don't buy from us? But I think between, you know, Brazil's basically sold out of beans. Argentina has a few, but they have some drafting problems on the Paraná River. And so it means we're the only game in town, which should help the situation. But again, we're kind of building this flag in price scenario as far as the nearby futures are concerned. And historically, when you have this big of a technical formation, when you break out of it, you're going to go a long way, either on the downside or the upside. And I think crushers are probably going to take some downtime in August. They just don't have the beans to crush, even though the margins are good. And I think that the main thing right now is the weather. And it depends on what weather forecast you want to look at. The GFS model changes every 6 hours. The EU model changes every 12 hours. And it's like people are trading those changes. And it's very choppy. But I think that if we go with our weather guy, August is going to be drier than normal. May not have a lot of heat, but I think most of the bean crop is rated as a whole below last year. So it's kind of hard to imagine us getting that 50.8 yield. But again, being raised on a farm, you really don't know your bean yield until you actually run the combine through the field.
So, Steve, I want to stay with you for a second, and the other guys can jump in here. How far along do you think farmers are on selling for fall or just for delivery at some point soybeans? And corn, I suppose, something like 25 to 40%, but I don't have a good feel for soybean. They sometimes just sell that across the scale more than anything else.
I think that as far as what I see, that they were aggressive sellers early. I would put in the East 30 to 40% of corn and beans sold. Now in the West, especially in Iowa and the Dakotas and Minnesota, I think that number was the same, but now if their crop is smaller, they could be over 50% sold with a smaller crop. And I get the feeling that, on one hand, they're very bullish. And I don't think they want to sell any more unless we get a good rally. But you have to remember that it is so tough to rally this time of year because I think they have probably 11 billion bushels of corn to sell and maybe four and a half billion bushels of beans to sell on, beginning of September. And that's a lot of bushels for the market to absorb. So it's almost like there is a rally in this market, but it may have to start after harvest and before the South American harvest.
Well, given that, and maybe the three of you can work this for me just a little bit. So let's go with they're sold up at that 30 to 40% level. And to the West, maybe more than that. We're at a high price for both crops. Should producers think strategically about these crops and how much cash flow they need before the end of the year and make sales somewhere sooner rather than later to put that in place? And Chip Nellinger, I'll start with you.
Todd, I think it comes down to where you're at in the Corn Belt, what your crop potential is. And you got to look at the gross dollars because in some cases, especially in the Eastern Corn Belt, you're staring at massive gross dollars right here in the face. And so I think it's prudent to have that in the back of your mind. And some of the best profit margins we've seen for a long, long time, helped by Mother Nature and the potential for what looks like really strong corn yields right now. So it would be impractical and imprudent not to take a strong look at that. All that being said, I think that basis of consideration too, there's a lot of areas that are going to have some early crops in late September. There's historically strong basis. So I think there's some basis maneuvers that need to be looked at here. There's historically very strong fall basis levels as well for crops that need to move. So even if it doesn't mean pricing the grain there, if you know you need the movement, there's extremely good basis levels at fall and, for early harvested crops. So, yeah, I think it all needs to be consideration, but it comes down to gross dollars per acre. And if you're in the Eastern Corn Belt, you're kind of sitting in the driver's seat here. You certainly want to leave some topside. There's ways to do that. But I think it definitely needs looked at right now, because there's a lot of outside market influences. As much as we talk about demand potential for maybe sub trend line yields, you're still in a COVID environment with shutdowns happening in other parts of the world. You've got a lot of outside market volatility, and there's always that risk that it could be something, you know, non-grain fundamental related that takes our markets lower.
Dave Chatterton. And really, Dave, I guess I'm thinking about how much they'll need before the end of the year, what the in charge might be at the grain elevator, and whether this is worth the opportunity to get everything covered on a normal kind of move in downward into the fall harvest season.
Yeah, Todd, if you look at it in that perspective and assume that we're going to get that, I think the answer is no. But I think if you put yourself in the producer's shoes, I mean, our average guys, I would say, are very optimistic towards what the future might be, but they sure don't want to lose sight of the fact that, as Chip pointed out, these are some very profitable levels on the farm from a per acre P&L standpoint. But when you look at the marketplace right now, you've had ample opportunity to make what sales you need to make, and hopefully you've been planning for and doing that. And when there was a basis inverse in the beans, you had the opportunity there, and you've had plenty of opportunity flat price to get to a point. And if you're not happy with where you're at, you know, look at today's prices. But putting either corn or soybeans in the bin, unpriced or unprotected, this fall is essentially a bet on futures at this point. I mean, there's very little carry in the cash market. There's virtually none in the beans. There's a very small amount in corn that's not going to pay those in charges on storage or DP, as you mentioned. But I think the decision at that point has to be how favorable you are on the market. There are certainly ways to use options to create a downside profile of protection while maybe putting an upside cap in place that's, you know, 50, 60 cents above where we're at in corn, maybe a dollar or more in soybeans, and not breaking the bank, doing something that's, you know, a dime or under in terms of premium. So I think you have to frame it up in those terms. I think cash flow right now, guys are not anxious to sell more or not in a position where they need to sell more. I think the government put, if we want to call it that, or the influx of non-traditional revenue programs, MFP, WIP, EDIL, et cetera, that farmers were able to capture this spring and this summer is sustaining them through this period, and not quite in the same situation that they would have been, let's say, last fall at this time. And at that point, we had, you know, to your point, we had a very attractive bean, you know, number coming on, certainly not where we're at now. We had corn that showed some carry, and so we had a lot of beans sold off the combine. I'm not sure that that's going to be the situation this year, but certainly, you know, pick your poison here, and you can find something to sell if you need the cash flow. Other than that, I think I'd use some optionality and some strategy here to take advantage of my bins in that way.
Steve Fried?
Well, I think it's almost impossible right now to consult a farmer, because, you know, you would just say, all right, these corn trades at 590, you need to sell some more. And when you look at, you know, the November beans, 1450, sell some more. But then, you know, if all of a sudden the market tests those levels and the carryouts even get tighter, you know, they wish they hadn't sold anything. So I think one other thing that we need to also consult them is that every grain carryout is going to be tight. So next year, all these markets are going to have to fight for acres. Spring wheat, corn, beans, oats, and so prices, I think, are going to have to see some type of bounce before next spring to make sure we have enough acres. With La Nina coming back, you know, you have to start worrying about Brazil crops and then what happens to our summer crops. And so there are just a lot of things going on in 2022 that might be a little more friendly than ending into 2021. So need to put your orders in and be happy with what you got, and then look ahead for 2022 to maybe even be a bigger price year.
Steve, does USDA have its demand figures for new crop in order properly?
No. you know, you have private guesstimates out there for carryouts for this year's corn, right around a billion bushels, which isn't too much different. But next year, you've got people as low as 693. And for beans, you've got people as low as 74 for 21-22. Now, they're never going to print those numbers ever. But price needs to, I think, do something to make sure that those numbers don't happen. So the machines are 90% of the volume we trade on a day-to-day basis, and they just have plugged in whatever the USDA says. So on August 12th, if they keep everything the same, that's going to be disappointing. And it has been disappointing from the July S&D. So on one hand, you have the private sector that believes things are tighter. And on the other hand, the USDA probably won't make a lot of changes.
Dave Chatterton, you want to fire in on this one?
Yeah, Todd. I mean, I think we're, you know, I'd echo exactly what Steve said. I think when you look at the USDA, if you want to reference back to your question on coal, I think their demand numbers are too low to look at a Chinese or look at our overall U.S. exports now. I mean, we've had a slow sales period here in the last number of weeks. But when you look at it in the bigger picture, our export sales for new crop for this point in the crop year are easily a record high. And China is a big part of that. We still think, you know, as Steve mentioned, I think China is going to take somewhere in that 28 to 30 million metric tons of corn. And they've got some work to do. They've got, let's say, 14 on with the U.S., maybe another 5 to 6 with Ukraine. So that's 19. That leaves 11. I think the U.S. has a big share of what's going forward in doing so. But looking at the Brazilian corn crop, I mean, I guess our estimate for the overall Brazilian corn crop might be, you know, 86, 86 and a half. USDA is at 93. I think they have to come down on that. USDA has Brazilian exports at 35 million metric tons. I think they're probably closer to 19 or 20 by the time it's all said and done. So you're talking about almost, that's 700 and, you know, 90 million bushels of corn that has to go somewhere or has to have a home found for it. So the demand side to me, like I said, has the ability, particularly on the corn side, to get a little bit tight here as our demand numbers pick up. The ethanol has healed itself up a little bit. Our animal numbers are going to be down just a little bit going into the last half of the year, but I think we see a rebound probably in the first half of next year. So I agree with Steve. I think the USDA has some work to do. I'm not sure that they want to print the numbers that we think they should or that the industry is currently penciling. But as long as they take the notion, starting here in the July report, to kind of start moving in that direction, I think it will start to maybe pique a little bit of the interest on the outside and in speculative investors here.
Well, let me read something. This aired this afternoon on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from the chief economist at USDA, Seth Meyer. This is from a July 22 agency program that he put on about drought in the western United States. He did talk about corn and soybeans and other crops at that point, and says some of it may be a little bit smaller corn and soybean crops than we might have anticipated. And he was referencing, I'm pretty certain at that point, acreage in the June report. And then he goes on to say, again, demand has been really robust so far in aggregate. I would say the drought is not a driver or not the principal driver, but that may very well change. So again, I will come back and ask about the USDA numbers as it's related to demand. Are they large enough at this point? And given what the chief economist is saying, he doesn't think the rally has that much to do with the weather.
Todd, I think if you look where the USDA is compared to a year ago on their demand, it's a pretty healthy increase. And right now you've had a little bit of a lull, like Dave mentioned, but just today, you know, our new crop export sales in corn and beans exceeded the top end of expectations. We sold some beans to unknown. This is normal to have this lull, this time frame, and then August comes and they start picking up. And, you know, I agree. I think the demand was there already. I think that the drought's going to, you know, help tighten up these stocks. And this Brazil situation, they're already importing corn from Argentina. There's rumors they might eventually import some small amounts of corn from the United States. They're not going to be a player in the export market because of their drought. And we're the only game, and beans as well. And so this thing, I think to Steve's point, some of the slowness, if you want to call that, to adjust some of these numbers, even going back 2 years to the prevent plant situation, done a disservice to farmers, but it also does a disservice to end users because they're caught thinking, well, we're going to grind lower and be able to buy, lower prices. And they got caught by this too. And I think that the end user situation, they're just hoping with their fingers crossed and their breath held that we do have some sort of a break into harvest, because I don't think there's much coverage on out there. I think the drought's taken over and surprised them. And I think that the strength of the demand could be a little bit surprising as you go forward in time here.
Steve, you wanted to follow up?
Again, I think the USDA has to be conservative. I mean, one rain, that's not forecasted, and, a lot of things change. But, it's not in the forecast. And I just think that, we're kind of running out of time for them to give us kind of a bullish thing. I think it is a weather market. But it's not the kind of weather market that you would just say gap and go, because I don't know, let's pick a number, 60, maybe 70% of this year's corn and bean crop could be record yields. And so I don't expect much from the USDA in August. The first thing I'll look at is some of the global numbers and see if they bring Canada and Russia wheat crops down, if they bring Canada's canola crop down, if they and what NAS does with the corn yield, and then we go from there. But I do think it's a weather market.
Steve, do you think that the wheat market, a short crop in the northern part of the United States, can lift corn prices?
Well, for a while there, wheat was following corn. We are talking globally about a record amount of wheat being fed, and here in the United States, you'll probably see a record amount of wheat being fed. Already that's being done in the hard red winter wheat areas. We would expect the same thing in soft wheat. I don't know how you fix the spring wheat problem. I think that millers and flour people have to go to plan B about what we're going to use domestically. But the problem with wheat is that every 6 months somewhere there's another crop being harvested, and it's and today was probably one of the first days that it kind of led the market because of the news out of the tour in North Dakota. But we're still looking at world wheat prices with hard red winter wheat right now trading, Bob, about $310, and you got the Baltic at $257. Germany 261, Russia 252, but an ill-defined market because the farmer's not selling there. And France at 262, but you have quality problems in France. So, we're still out of the markets, and the last Egyptian tender was done out of Ukraine. So, it's really tough to say, okay, I think Minneapolis wheat is worth $10. Well, we probably won't trade there because it's a global market, and we're one of the probably smallest players in the export trade, and that we've lost some of our leadership as far as price discovery on a world basis.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. I think, Dave Chatterton, we'll start with you from Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, I guess from a producer's seat here, as far as what we've talked about today, certainly be optimistic. I think going forward and looking at what we look at as probably a balance sheet that can tighten not only from the supply side, but also in conjunction with the demand side and some combination of the two. But having said that, don't lose sight of the fact here that these are very profitable levels from a production standpoint. And I think it was Chip that pointed out, there's always risk in the market. If you look back at the last year's worth of volatility and say that things can't change quickly or things can't change, period, then you're simply burying your head in the sand. So we don't know what we don't know about what the Fed may or may not do and how politics may go between the Biden administration and China, or what, COVID, curveball lies next ahead of the road here. So having said that, you have to be prudent risk manager on your farm and realize that these are levels that are very profitable going forward. I think the demand outlook going forward is promising, or if not, at least it's supportive. I think the U.S. forecast that we have in hand today bodes poorly for maximizing yields in the last, third of the growing season here, or the grain fill of the growing season here. And the USDA has some very lofty goals. I mean, they have a record national corn yield on their balance sheet right now, the second highest ever soybean yield nationally. And as we pointed out, we're going to have record yields in some portion of the grain belt. We're also going to have some pretty poor results in portions of the grain belt, if any. We've got very little cash carry in the market. I think we talked a little bit about that. So putting grain away in the way in the bin that's unprotected here is basically a bet that futures are going higher. And I'm not sure that that's a bet that you want to take without some coverage in place. I don't know that I would tell you that that's the wrong idea to go ahead and fill your bins, but I would tell you that you may want some protection underneath that as we wait for some of these things to develop. I think we've pointed out a picture here that the USDA may be slow to kind of pick up and go down this path just because of the price initiative or the price implications that it may have. But as a producer, I still think we're in a situation where, unlike, the last 5, 6, 8 years, you can still have your offensive cap on here as opposed to playing a lot of defense. These are profitable levels. Get yourself to a point where you're comfortable versus your own cash flow and your own goals on your farm. But, be looking with an eye to the future here. As far as 2022 goes, I think there's a lot of interest and talk about what can be done. The problem is we don't know really anything about imports, or excuse me, about inputs at this particular point, other than those costs are going up. U of I think, as you mentioned earlier in the week, Todd put out some information on that. They've got their input costs for 2022 up somewhere between 15 and 18%. Their overall costs somewhere up between 12 and 14%. So, with the spreads right now, it's a new crop corn, D's 21 to D's 22 is 50, 55 cents. You're talking more like $1.10 in beans. It's something that you want to keep an eye on here, but I'm not sure that you want to be pulling the trigger in an aggressive way.
Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing in Morton, Illinois. Your final word.
Yeah, I think a couple things I'd add to what Dave said. This might be a year. There's a lot of interest in that 22. We don't even know what the 21 crop size is yet. I'd probably be in the camp that we're a little bit sub-trend line in both corn and beans, but the month of August is going to tell more of that tale. And until you know what the final crop size is here and what demand's going to be like the next few months, I think it's way too early on this 21. There's a lot of interest because it's at a high level, both corn and beans. But to Dave's point, you don't know what inputs are. They're not going down. You know that. They're going to be higher to some extent. It's just a matter of how much higher. In my mind, this might be a year on the 22. You'd be try to be a little bit patient, hold your breath, see what the spring crop insurance price is going to be before you make too many decisions or take your foot too far off of first base there. I think also on the basis, now is the time to be planning this. There's great opportunities, great gross dollar profit margins. But I think basis is, kind of needs to take a look at here. If you need to make some fall movement, I think now's the time to kind of be planning that and maybe locking in basis. If you think you're going to have some early bushels, everyone's plays that game this time of year when there's a good early premiums. Play poker, hold to the bitter end. The problem is you can either be all right or all wrong, because once the processor and the end user realizes when they can get that crop, the bids are going to go away. So I think basis is a very strong consideration right now as well. I think that we're going to have continuing choppy, volatile trade, and you can position in that kind of a market to where, use the setbacks to position and open up your topside, use the strong rallies, to get stuff sold, and use that volatility to your favor, but you got to have a plan to do that.
And finally, Steve Fried from ADM Investor Services.
Well, I think that each farmer has to look at his individual situation, but if we get over or near $14 in November beans, we probably have some more cash sales, especially east of Mississippi and Iowa, Nebraska. Corn, 580 to 590. Just say it was a great year, unless you're in the Northwest Corn Belt. And then, when you look at D's 22 at $5 and NOV at 1268, that's too low. And I think that those markets eventually have to go higher. So I agree, I wouldn't be real aggressive on a rally for locking in 2022 until we see, you know, what happens down the road. I don't think end users have very good coverage, especially in corn right now. And so, you know, it'll be an interesting next 6 months, I think, especially with La Nina picking up. So be a scale-up seller if you're in the good areas, and then look ahead for 2022.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like. You can do that on our website at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Dave Chatterton, Steve Freed, and Chip Nellinger. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.